There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Give us your attention, we need everything you got fast. Waiting on reparations, we be the illest podcast.
Tune in every Thursday, politics and wordplay. We fight for the people cause they got us in the worst way.
From the hill to Brazil, Bombay to Kanye.
From the left enclave to what the neocons say.
Every Thursday, cop the heady conversation.
And break us off with some bread cause we waiting on reparations.
Listen to Waiting on Reparations on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the latest season of the Next Question with Katie Couric podcast, Katie dives into, well, Katie. Hear exclusive podcast-only conversations between Katie and the people who made her memoir, Going There, possible.
Katie is a pack rat, and she has basically her own archive of sorts in her basements.
Plus, Katie explores some of the big news stories she's covered over the decades and the people behind them, like Anita Hill.
I thought I could just get back to my life. And that wasn't possible. It was not going to be the same.
There's plenty of Katie's signature curiosity and no-holds-barred interviews, along with some of her own revealing answers.
We spent a lot of time together around a dining room table here and in the city. And, you know, it was a very intense experience.
All episodes of Next Question with Katie Couric are available now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Cavalry Audio, the studio that brought you The Devil Within and The Shadow Girls, comes a new true crime podcast, The Pink Moon Murders.
The local sheriff believes there may be more than one killer.
They were afraid. It's faced out in that area.
A family was targeted, most of them targeted while they were sleeping.
The Pink Moon Murders is available on February 22nd, and you can follow The Pink Moon Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Chris Haston, and I'm an NBC staff photographer, and I was the key photographer on The Office and main man of Kate Flannery.
Hello, Office family. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Office Deep Dive. I am your host, Brian Baumgartner. Today, I have a very special guest joining me. He was an essential part of the crew of The Office, and in many ways, he has actually helped shape our memories from the show. He is the reason that we have so many incredible behind-the-scenes photos from our time on set, because he was our extremely talented and absolutely hilarious NBC staff photographer. That's right. we're bringing on the incomparable Chris Haston. Now, what? Why are you talking to the NBC staff photographer? That doesn't make sense. Well, Chris was that, but he also has become a part of our family. Yes, that's right. He became the main man of Kate Flannery, aka Meredith Palmer, who actually makes a cameo at the top of this episode today. Gosh, I love these two. Everyone in the Office community loves these two. Now, in addition to The Office, Chris, having worked for NBC since 1985, has worked on some other shows you may have heard of, maybe. Okay, you've definitely heard of them. The TV he's touched is almost unreal. You know, like Friends, Seinfeld, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Community, The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. He has done it all. But only one show really changed his life. Because, I mean, romantically, right? I will tell you also that Chris also played a huge role in my upcoming book. That's right. Welcome to Dunder Mifflin is coming out November 16th. You can pre-order it on Amazon right now. So go grab yourself a copy. Grab one for your friends. Grab one for your family. Get ready to be blown away. I cannot wait for you guys to read it. And Chris offered so many behind-the-scenes photos that are included in this book. So I'm so excited to talk to him about those moments. But for now, get ready to focus. Get it? Like focus a camera? We're focusing. Well, we're focusing on the man behind the camera. Please give a warm welcome to the amazing Chris Haston, everybody.
Bubble and squeak. I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every moment left over from the night before.
What is happening?
What's up, Daddy-O?
How are you?
I'm great, man. Good to see you.
Where is your mustache?
Oh, what? I haven't had that since COVID, man. It just got too hot and sweaty, if you know what I'm saying. That's what she said. But no, I shaved it off just because wearing a mask all the time was impossible.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's smart.
Hold on. Kate, would you get out of my eye line, please? I've always wanted to say that to an actor. Get the hell out of my eye line.
Is Kate there? Kate's there right now?
Kate, come here. She is there. This is her mic. This is where she does her...
This is her setup.
How are you?
Kate, what is happening? I'm talking to your man.
I know. I love it. I can barely hear you on the headphones.
Okay. It looks like a Broadway show curtain behind you.
Every
I mean,
night,
this is
man,
you.
Every night, just for him, an audience of one.
All right, can I get on? Can I get on?
Love
with
you.
This, please?
Okay, I know. How long are you guys going to talk?
I love you too.
Love what? You. I miss you.
We're
how being, long are you guys going to talk?
We're being recorded. Don't
okay, I'm
worry
sorry.
About it.
None of my business. Okay.
All right.
Have fun. Love you.
All right. Thank you.
Well, there's the comedy portion of the interview, Brian.
Oh, it only begins there.
I know, man.
It's so good to see. So you're well. Everybody's okay.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely fine.
All right. So I want to go backwards in time a little bit. How did you get into photography?
Well, as a kid, you know, you always hear those stories. Oh, when I was 9 or 11 years old, you know, when I was 9, somebody put a camera in my hand and I fell in love with it. And when, you know, all the kids in the neighborhood, I'm from Southern California, so skateboarding and surfing was it. So when everyone else is skateboarding half pipes and pools, I was taking photos of everybody.
Of
so,
everybody doing yeah. half pipes and pool. Okay.
Exactly. So we're still best friends. So, you know, we always have our war stories and mine has to do with photography, but I started landing jobs here and there, working really hard to get into places. And I was going to school at the time in Torrance and started working for an agency shooting auto racing. That's my first professional gig.
Shooting auto racing?
We shot off-road racing and eventually road racing. And yeah, it was great. I'm self-taught. So they had a studio there, which is the main reason I wanted to work there. And then I taught myself lighting. It's funny, about a year before I started at NBC, which, by the way, I did this waiting for NBC to open up. Somebody goes, did you ever think of shooting people? I go, no way, man. I said, people get up and walk out on photo shoots. There's no way I'm ever going to shoot people. A year later, I'm shooting some of the worst subjects. No offense, but
I mean, none taken. That was the early days. But wait a second. You were self-taught?
I've taught myself lighting. I've taught myself about exposure. I've taught myself, you know, I mean, I had 1 year of college that's all I needed. I went to a small Christian school, so they offered nothing. I shot for the newspaper and yearbook, which they were awful. I look back on that stuff and go, if I knew then what I know now, you know. But yeah, it was just, it's a learning thing all the way. And, you know, I've been at NBC for a really, really long time. And now I'm the head guy.
Now you're it. Okay. But before that, you're shooting off-road racing. So you're shooting cars off the road? Okay.
Out in the desert, we'd pre-run for 2 days and find our spots. And then we'd either camp there or somebody would drop us off. And then the race would start. And you pretty much kind of knew, okay, well, there's 100 cars and I've seen about 95 of them. Well, I'm getting the heck out of here. And it was dangerous because we were down in Mexico. You know, you're pulled over, machine guns in your face. And you either have a bunch of photos. We had a lot of racer photos all the time. Or my boss would go get Playboy magazines at garage sales, and it's amazing how far you can get with a Federale with a machine gun in your face and a Playboy magazine. Isn't that great?
It sounds like the Federales are there right now, actually. So you're self-taught as a photographer, and then you're shooting off-road, and then you find out about a job at NBC. This is 1985?
No, in 1980, I found out.
Okay,
first of all, my senior year of high school, I'm like, wait a minute, somebody gets paid to take pictures in the movies? And then I really freaked out. And then I ended up meeting a guy. I went to NBC in Burbank, and it was the Johnny Carson stage, and Billy Crystal was doing a pilot. It's back when he did You Look Marvelous. It was the beginning of that.
Wow.
And I was there with a girl, and she goes, hey, I know that guy down there. And it happened to be a friend of her mom's. And she knew that he worked there. I never knew it. And she slipped him a note, and he invited us down. We went into the lab, which was my office for 25 years. And I immediately hit him up. And he's like, you know, after 3 months, he's like, don't ever call me again. And I bugged him every year. I knew it was going to happen. And it was NBC the whole time, because that was it. You know, NBC was the network. And finally, after 5 years, they called and said, you still interested? And I went in as a lab guy, wiping everybody's nose and taking out their trash. And again, I go in there and I learn how they do it big time. And what's funny about it is no photographer on staff would tell me, stay out of an actor's eye line. Don't hit on the actresses. don't do this, don't do that. And I just went and I got to set and I was a nervous wreck, but I never showed it. And, you know, I've worked on some of the biggest shows in history.
Right. What was the first show that you worked on out of the lab? Like when they let you go on set?
Well, Punky Brewster, the original Punky Brewster was done on our lot, and everyone was bored with a lot of shows, and this was a kid show. And, I knew that there were some old school actors on there, and I thought, man, maybe I can handle this. And they said, go grab a camera and go. And we used to use these gigantic housings that went around a Nikon or a Canon that soundproofed it. I grabbed it and I was fumbling and all that. It was only 36 frames. So you get through 36 frames and then you got to switch it out. But anyway, I went down there and started doing that, and I'm sure the pictures were awful. And then the second thing was like instantaneous, because they knew I can handle myself. I started shooting the Johnny Carson show. That was a rotation thing. So everybody did it, every fourth or fifth week, however many photographers were in that roster for it. And that was showbiz, baby. That's when I got bit.
Wow.
Yeah.
The Carson show. I mean, that.
I know.
Right? I mean, for comedians at the time, I mean, appearing on that, and you're back there shooting it. How amazing was that? And
not just that, dude. It's like, Stephen Wright would come into the green room and I'd be sitting there waiting for the show to start. And we never shot Johnny's monologue unless it was required or asked by the producers. And like Stephen Wright would be there and like, I'd be like, hey man, I mean, it's just like, you're trying not to like, you know, throw up. And I would always, you know, with the comedians especially, I did it with some of the musicians, but I'm like, hey, if you want me to send you some photos, which, you know, I didn't have the authority to do that in the beginning, but once it was really rolling, I'd send Stephen Wright some photos. And Jeff Foxworthy, God, that guy's such a great guy. He saw me recently. He goes, hey, by the way, I don't hang a lot of stuff in my house, but there's a black and white that you shot of me and Johnny is belly laughing. He goes, that hangs right outside my kitchen and it's like my Buddha. I touch it every morning. Which, man, that's my payoff right there.
That is awesome. Who was the coolest person on the Tonight Show that you shot? Like for you.
Oh, dude. I mean, God. We'd go sit in the audience during rehearsals and the Chili Peppers would play for like an hour and Iggy Pop would just come this far from your face and just be screaming at you while he's singing. And they love that stuff because we're an audience of like 10 people that wanted to see them. I don't know, man. It was, I mean, Jimmy Stewart, you know,
wow.
I can't even think. It was all great.
So you shot Jimmy Stewart and me.
So... That's pretty much all I really talk about.
I mean, that's kind of right. Yeah. I mean, that's there's nothing in between those two. In addition to the Tonight Show, and you mentioned this before, NBC was it, right? I mean, NBC was the
Must
network.
See TV, which, by the way, Warren Littlefield and I, we were hand in hand with each other, and he calls me his Must See TV photographer.
Really?
Yeah, because I was there through that whole era, and I was a go-getter and young and willing to just do anything, so.
Cheers? You shot Cheers?
I shot the end of Cheers.
Yeah.
I was Leno's photographer when Carson left for the first 5 years, and we flew to Boston, and we were in the Bull and Finch the night it went off the air. But Paramount sent me upstairs above the Bull and Finch to be in a room with the cast while they watch TV, and they go, you really shouldn't be there, but try and get photos.
The finale? This was the finale?
They were watching the finale on TV in a hotel room in Boston. It wasn't a big room, and it was really dark, and it was very intimate. I've been in some scary places, Brian.
Well, but that was, I remember that night. After the finale, they did the Tonight Show afterward.
Yeah.
And so you were with them through...
There were a lot of photos I did not take that night. I was with the cast all day. I was in a limo with Kelsey Grammer doing business on his way to the State House. And Kelsey wasn't having a good phone call. He was on that phone in a limo behind with the cable, you know, and the door opens and he gets out and we walked up the steps of the State House for him to bang a gavel. And I've been in some places, Brian, and there's some other stories we'll tell when we're not being recorded.
I'm sure I remember seeing the cast of Cheers that night on the Tonight Show. And
they were kind of bombed, weren't they?
Bombed. That's exactly how it appeared.
Yeah. Everyone was drunk.
Appeared to me. That is so amazing. And so also you shot Seinfeld. You shot Saved by the Bell, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Will and Grace.
Yeah.
You've spoken to me a lot about Friends. You were at NBC the whole time Friends was on, right?
Yep. I did, usually I did the pilot gallery. The gallery is, there's two types of photography I do, is there unit and gallery. Unit is something that you're on a set, you shoot images that look like they're coming out of the motion picture camera. I take a liberty with that because there's sometimes you don't want the camera on a set. Could be on the floor shooting this wide room shot, but I don't want some actress coming at me going, that is a terrible photo of me. So I sort of take the liberty of getting better pictures that way. But the gallery stuff is kind of the rock and roll stuff. And I have been fortunate to do several years of galleries of the biggest shows on NBC.
Wow. And the galleries are kind of pre-set up shots. For those listening, that usually happens right before a season starts. you'll shoot the cast in various poses that'll be used for publicity and marketing throughout the year, right?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah.
So the covers you see on TV guides, or you're sitting at a light and there's a bus next to you, that's all the stuff that we do.
Yeah. So you had, I'm skipping ahead quite a bit here, but you had one of the most famous, at least from our show, The Office, the George Seurat painting, Sunday in the Park on the Isle of French Words. And you,
I thought it was just a reservoir. Thought, isn't that a French word?
Right. But you set up the Office characters as though they were in that painting one year. Tell me a little bit about that, or your idea behind that.
One of our top designers at NBC, his name's Sean Serio. He's an award-winning guy. It was his gig, and he always gets the real cool gig. So we got together, and I took the original painting, not the original, but, you know, I took that image and sort of traced over, and I took out a couple people, or added a couple people, and I placed everyone where I thought, you know, with Craig Robinson in the hat, or Jim and Pam walking in with the umbrella, or Kate, you know, with the drink in her hand. So we sort of designed all of that. We pretty much shot everyone singly, except Jim and Pam were there together. And that, I mean, you guys were amazing because you looked like you're there with a bunch of people. That's the beauty of photography, man. It's nothing but a big fat lie. And production, everyone can't just stop what they're doing and walk off set.
Right.
So we did everybody one at a time, and I had plenty of time with you guys. We had a really good time.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. What was, let's exclude The Office for a second. What was your favorite other show, let's say, to shoot at NBC?
Well, one of the most intense, most incredible shoots for me was Homicide: Life on the Street. I think it was the third season. I mean, it was like if Breaking Bad was going and they asked me to go do that photo shoot, it was like that because it was just rich, and the sets in Baltimore were unbelievable. And I knew the show inside and out. And that's another thing, too, is I really like to know what I'm doing going in. Sometimes I don't. Pilots, you just don't know.
Right.
But this one I knew. I knew the box was a sacred place, and that the worst people in Baltimore were inside the box, and Andre Brower was going to be really in their face. So those are some pretty phenomenal photos. I used to enjoy Third Rock from the Sun because Lithgow is one of my favorite people in Hollywood. Yeah. And it was a party. Oh, ER, we had a good time on ER, even though it was very tense. I don't know if I should say this, but I'm going to. Occasionally, we'd bring in beer and wine, and something a little harder sometimes if somebody requested it. But we'd get everybody lit when we were shooting on the back lot at Warner Brothers late at night. We'd do these photo shoots of them coming out the door or into the ambulance. And yeah, those were crazy, wild parties. Yeah, dangerous.
We didn't have that on our show. We didn't, I guess.
That's because you guys had 100 people on your show.
Well, maybe. I guess that's true. Talk a little bit about your process. Oh, so first off, a multi-camera show like Cheers or Friends, the cameras are set up. Do you have pretty much free roam to be able to take photos from anywhere sort of in front?
Sometimes, if you have an actress that doesn't want anybody in her eye line, or she'd be too, or I don't even say she, I've had many a guy go, hey, I can see you moving. And, you know, well, okay. Let me start by saying a still photographer is the only job on set that can be asked not to do their job. So you can't have the actor go out. You can't have the sound guy leave. You can't have one of the camera guys split. So I'm the one person who can be asked not to do their job. But when all that's moving, it is one of the most beautiful dances you've ever seen. One of my favorite directors in the world is Jim Burrows. I have done so many projects with Burrows. Will and Grace, I could run up to the very front of the lenses and work if I wanted to.
Right.
I wouldn't do that. I'm big. I'm a big dude. And right. I do take up a lot of space. But it's a relationship you get with the dolly grips. You know, if you've ever seen this, if anybody's ever seen the big dollies that cameras roll on, those guys will run you over. And those things can run you over. They're a tank. I've seen other guys get clipped and it ain't pretty, but it's a dance. And as long as you know how to dance, you will survive in that situation. And there are times where Burroughs is famous for putting his foot on the dolly and kicking it. And there, his guys are so good, they start rolling the wheels and the camera follows the actor or whatever. It's truly amazing. But I've been in the middle of two dollies when that happens and you just kind of get out of there.
Do you find that you still have the same passion that you did that first drew you in?
Is it absolutely. Oh, no, man. It's the best job in Hollywood. It is the best job in Hollywood. I love to joke. You know, you see some guy shoving a whole giant piece.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Pizza down his mouth at 2 a.m. and just to get himself home. I'm like, hey, glamorous business, right? But everywhere I go, I mean, I see so many people from The Office. I just saw Kelly Cantley last week. I see guys from Will and Grace all the time. I see, you know, even working like America's Got Talent, I see camera guys that I've known for 25 years.
That's awesome.
And it's such a small, tiny business, but it's like the biggest, tiniest business in the world. Sorry, I'm so excited. I'm knocking the mic around. But no, my passion is, holy cow. I can't believe I get paid to do this. And I just, Kate will argue with you, but I just don't have the ego that photographers normally have. And, right. You know, I'm taking photos. I'm not a plastic surgeon. I'm a documentarian in a way. I love to use that on people.
Yes. No, but you are. Yeah. No, you are a documentarian. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm not just there documenting. I'm most of the time creating the documentation of that.
Right.
So that's what I love about being in a studio and doing a gallery and just making, it's amazing, Brian. Sunday in the Park with George was such a great famous painting. It's been copied so many times. And the fact that it carried the weight, that image carries the weight that it does. I mean, people like, oh my God, you worked on The Office? I'm like, yeah, I'm a photographer. And then I mentioned that and they think they're talking to, you know, a big star. I'm like,
that's awesome.
I move on to the next thing, man. I'm not worried about it.
It's a hard time for hiring. So you need a hiring partner built for hard times. That's Indeed. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. Because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applications that meet your must-have requirements or else you don't pay. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites hoping to find candidates with the right skills, you need one hiring partner that can help you do it all. Indeed partners with you on every step of the hiring process. Find great talent through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates with resumes on Indeed that match your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. Plus, you only pay for quality applications that meet your must-have requirements. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive. Offer valid through March 31st. Go to Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive to claim your $75 credit before March 31st. Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Obviously, you and I share a passion, which is The Office. 2004, NBC ordered this show. Now, were you aware of the British version of the show?
You know what? When I heard this was coming at us, I watched the British, probably in a day or two, I watched it all. And it was, I watched it 3 times only because it was so frustrating and I hated it so much. I'm like, I don't get it. And then once I started watching it and the characters grew on me, then I loved it. The reason I watched it so many times to get it is because I had worked on 50 British shows already that they were trying to make here that failed.
Right.
By the way, I shot the very first images for the gallery, which we can get into if you want.
Yeah.
But I went to that crappy little warehouse in Culver City, and we went in there and shot, and I shot Pam behind the desk, and I did that famous 4-shot of them looking at the computer.
Yeah.
So we show up, and we had an art director who was a very, like, he's a very showbiz guy. His name was Jim. And Jim had this very, like, thunderous voice who, whatever Jim said, Jim wanted, and Jim was going to get. So we get there, and Greg Daniels is there.
Okay.
And he's walking around. And I was confused. I mean, okay, you're going to shoot this. They're all going to be looking at the monitor. And, you know, normally we're having them looking at the camera so we can identify them and, you know, people connect with them. And then Jim Vincent is there. And he goes, all right, hey, you. And he points at John. He goes, you look at the camera. And out of nowhere, Greg flies in and he goes, if anybody looks at this camera, the photo shoot is over. Because it was so new in the process that I don't think we wanted to give up any secrets and or break that fourth wall for the photos,
right?
Because we weren't quite there yet. And this was our first group shot. And I completely was with Greg. He knew what he wanted. If I could jump ahead real quick, there were times where we would have a real secret or something that they did not want to go out, I developed a relationship with Greg and the producers, the whole show, where I would shoot it and we would tag it so it wouldn't go out. Like, I knew, people know that Steve was in the finale, right? Can I say that finally? Oh, thank God. But I was probably one of five people that knew that morning. They warned me, which is the greatest thing ever. If somebody doesn't warn you, like Carson's show, they'd never warn us. There's a big giant thing that's going to fall down and just miss his head. It's like, you'll miss the shot if you're not ready for it.
Right.
So I was standing just off camera when he says, I can't be your bestest mensch. And I heard Steve walk up and I'm just like, oh my God, this is it. I can't tell you how many of those moments I've actually been there for. So to know that, and I didn't even tell Kate, I didn't tell a soul because that's the way I am, man. I'm like, if you tell me something no one's supposed to know, no one's going to know it. If the network's not supposed to know about it, they're only one person at the network's going to find out, my editor. And I'm going to say, this doesn't go anywhere until it airs, which is kind of powerful, but I never thought I'd have that kind of power.
So wait, when you got there that day, you knew he was going to be there and they said, don't release.
Not right away. I think when I was geared up and walking on a set, actually I did see him when he walked up to the house. So, I mean, I probably knew about 5-10 minutes before he walked up. So I think when he landed, they said, Steve's here.
Right.
Be ready. So.
Wow.
And by the way, I want to say one other thing, and I love telling people this. When we're on the set there, that very first day when Greg said, nobody looks at the camera, I had worked at least 10 pilots with Carell. And I mean, I worked on some of the most amazing things with him. And when he walked up, I jokingly said to my crew, you guys, Steve Carell's in this. Let's pack it up. We're getting out of here. This ain't going anywhere. And he got a really good laugh out of it. Steve and I always had the tightest relationship because I had known him for so many years. And, you know, if he needed something, I was always welcome into his trailer, which was the coolest trailer in Hollywood. And, you know, it was a good relationship to have with him.
Right.
Such a great guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think also going back to that first day, you know, a big thing I know for Greg early on was he wanted to establish these characters or these people, meaning Jim and Pam and Michael and Dwight, and this idea that they were not actors, right? And so actors pose for the camera. Actors look into the camera and do, you know, glamour shots or whatever you want to call it. Whereas if you're a bunch of people at a mid-level / small regional paper company, you wouldn't look into the camera. You would be doing what you're doing and hoping to capture it. That's really fascinating to me that it started even before we started shooting the pilot when you were doing the gallery. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you'd shot like 10 pilots you mentioned with Steve Carell. Was there anybody else from The Office that you had shot prior to The Office?
Yeah, I was on a pilot one time and we're working in this great old school building near downtown. And I walk in and there's these two geeks that are there. One of them is playing a robot. One of them is playing the robot's friend. And it was a pilot. And I treat pilots the same. You get in, you do your thing and get out. And this one guy comes up to me, goes, you know what I'd really like for you to do? I'd like you to do this, that, and the other. And I turn to him and I go, look, pal, this is a pilot. If this show's picked up, I will kiss your ass and do whatever you want. And it was Rainn Wilson.
Are you serious?
It was his very first pilot he ever did.
And what?
To this day, when anybody's introduced to me by Rainn, he goes, this guy shot me on my very first pilot. And we never have talked about me telling him that, but he respected me and he went with it at that moment.
Right. Now, wait, but let me ask you this. So you were there early on. Did you like the show?
You know, I was worried at first because I, you know, like I said, I'd been on so many shows that didn't think it worked. And I felt that the first two episodes of The British Office were so British And I worried that, oh, wait a minute, this is just like it. But I didn't understand. And of course, since then, I have found, I mean, I know how brilliant all of our top-notch people were, like all of our above-the-line people were. And I've grown to really open up my eyes now when I go on set, like, those guys are geniuses. Greg Daniels is a genius, a fearless genius. And it was breaking my heart even back then that it was, you know, 6 episodes. And
right.
We might give you one more episode. And when I see that now, I scream at people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, are you guys going to do how many episodes? And well, they're adding 3 more. I'm like, oh, yeah. How dare they? You know, don't they realize they're sitting on a gold mine?
Yeah. Now, on The Office, there were 4 walls, which there usually are, and a space.
Yep.
There was no place to hide, and because of the way the show was shot, the camera's moving around all of the time. So there is a huge dance between, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of times, really 3 people, excluding yourself, are in the space. There's a boom operator, you've got mics on people, and you got 2 camera guys who are swinging the camera around. And so then into that, they bring your big behind. Like, where?
I'm so glad you asked this question.
Yeah. So how do you, you know, it's one thing.
How do I fit in?
Yeah. There's one thing to have this huge dolly that, you know, if you stay behind the dolly,
sure.
They're not going to shoot you because there's an audience behind you and everything else. But in this, you're having to learn the dance along with the camera guys and the sound guys. How different was that for you doing your job on our show?
Well, Brian and I, we occupied the same 3-inch square on every floor, and that's hard to do. At least Brian
the sound guy.
Brian, our sound guy, who's an amazing mixer now. But he and I were in the same spot. And when we were in a corner in that conference room or something, that conference room was 10,000 times smaller when you got to photograph it. We just managed. And Brian, he just jokingly rolled his eyes every time he saw me. And I'm very gracious, and I ask permission. I would always ask Randall or Matt if I could be, you know, in a certain place. And I managed. I mean, again, that's where a longer lens will come into play, and you're able to sort of get in. And I'll try to do 2 passes on every scene. I'll try to go wide and include everyone, and then I try to get, if it's an argument at the copier or Pam's talking to Michael at the desk, I'll go in tight on that with a longer lens. That's easy to get. Randall, God bless that guy. Him and Matt, man, those guys are the 2 best I've ever worked with. Sorry for all you other guys I've worked with. But like, I learned this on ER, where there was a little sort of island in the middle of the emergency room. And when they were on a handheld, they would do whips. And I was okay.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
There's 2 kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
And there I watched, and if I saw him open his eye, I knew he was coming that way. Well, Randall and I developed a thing where, and Matt too, I think Randall gave me sort of a little click or a psst. And the moment he did that, I hit the deck. I literally would drop to the floor. And Matt would actually whip through me. He didn't care. Like, because, you know, a whip, you can't, you're not even going to, even if you stop the frame on your recording, you're not going to, see anything. I'm just a big, I wear black all the time. So it's just a black white.
Interesting.
But it was, yeah, it was, and that makes you feel like a rock star. That makes you feel like, man, I am on the best set in Hollywood and I'm here making it happen.
Yeah.
There was a moment several years ago that actually it was right when Steve left. Well, when Steve left, I had management at NBC and they brought in a guy over me who wasn't as qualified as myself and my other partner that were there. And so they were making life difficult. So some of the rock star stuff was taken away from me and the galleries were being done by this other guy. And the new season was coming along and, you know, I don't pay attention to anything until they're like, okay, we're going to do this shoot. So I knew the office shoot was coming up though. That was the one I knew was coming up. And then John and I had a conversation and he told me that he said that unless Chris Haston does this gallery, we're not doing it. And that, my friend, is a powerful producer on a show. And that, my friend, is somebody I will take a bullet for. And if he needs me to do anything in life, he can call me at any hour and I'll be there. Because that that was a true friendship move. And Krasinski, man, I'm so glad he's such a huge rock star now and won't talk to me. I'm kidding. No, we talked recently.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we talked recently about something. So, yeah.
That's amazing.
He's a class act.
He really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just so you know, I would have done whatever they asked me to do, whether you were there or not, just to be clear. Okay. You talked about your relationship with Steve. You've known him for a while. How accommodating was he to work with throughout his time on the show?
He was probably the most intense. And I mean, he is a big movie star by the time things really started rolling. In fact, he might have been the only one. Yeah, I was, you know, here's an example. I was in his office once. I was between Matt and Randall, and Brian was somewhere with his boom. And I hadn't watched the rehearsal. Sometimes it's, I don't want to be in a tight little space like that for rehearsals, but I didn't know he was going to cry in the scene. I don't even know if he knew he was going to cry in the scene in the beginning. And that soundproof housing wasn't 100% soundproof housing. So it was like, you know, click, click, click. And it was, you could barely hear it, but a man who has to cry on cue, he heard it. And he didn't even look up, but he just goes, Chris. And it's like, you might as well hear that out of a foghorn. It's like, Chris. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, Steve. And all you can do is apologize and leave and just, you know, save face. I mean, trust me, man. There are other actors who are like, if I told you once. It's like, well, you haven't told me once. There was somebody else on the show later on, but I'm not going to mention his name. But they'll really let you have it. But, and so unfortunately at this point, the room is so small. Matt has to get up off of his box, turn. Brian has to get out of the way so I can get the heck out of the room.
Oh God.
So it's humiliating. It's humiliating. But you know something, Brian, you can't take it personal.
Right.
It's hard not to. But it's just a job. So that's just the way I've looked at it.
Yeah.
It's your job and don't take it personal and you'll be fine.
Hi, I'm Hillary Clinton and I'm excited to be back with a new season of You and Me Both. You know, when we started this podcast, we were going through some tough times and let's face it, we still are. but I am a firm believer we're stronger together. So please join me for more conversations with people who will make you think, make you laugh, and help us find a path forward. Listen to You and Me Both on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Emmy Olea. On this podcast, I'm taking you on a search for love.
Emmy, 24, hardworking Latina, seeks cool, down-to-earth guy. Swipe, swipe, swipe.
It's hard out there for a girl. To find Mr. Right, I've had to meet a lot of Mr. Wrongs.
He'd invite me over to have dinner with his family. I knew he didn't tell him that I was transgender.
Dating as a trans woman can be complicated. But there were other reasons I felt like I couldn't always be myself.
He's asking me things about my family. Like, my mom's in prison. My grandmother was arrested for working with the Mexican drug cartel.
This is Crumbs, my love story. It's a show about the things we settle for and the bits of ourselves that make us who we are. Listen to Crumbs as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Dutton.
And I'm Elizabeth Dutton. Oh, wait, sorry.
Zarin, do you want to say your name?
No, I'm good. Go ahead.
We're the hosts of Ridiculous Crime. People love true crime, right? The mystery, the intrigue, the human frailty.
Totally.
But what a lot of us don't like is the blood and the guts and the mayhem.
Wait. Some of us do like the mayhem.
Okay, but let's be real. There's nothing funny about murder.
Okay, that's right.
Our show gives you stories like the kidnapping of Frank Sinatra Jr. and the Max Headroom signal hijacking.
Oh, so you mean ridiculous stories like the UK cat shaver and Pablo Escobar's cocaine hippos?
Yeah, stories like the dudes who stole Buzzy, the animatronic whatever he was, from Disney World, and the woman whose husband tried to kill her but came back from the dead and surprised him at her own funeral.
Yeah, that does sound good.
You can find this new podcast, Ridiculous Crime, all over the place. The iHeartRadio app, the Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I don't know how you live.
Ridiculous Crime.
What was your favorite memory being on set of The Office?
I was afraid you were going to ask me this because I know you ask so many people this question. One of the funniest things that happened on a regular basis, Kate loves the fact that I hung out in the fake men's room. But the fake men's room was the route to the real men's room because there was no back wall. And I'd be sitting there editing on my computer or whatever. And Leslie David Baker did it 10 times if he did it once. They opened the door like, oh, sorry. I'm like, I'm not taking a shit here. Dude, the restroom's right there. Keep going. You know what? I hate to be so cliche, but it's like any day I walked in the door there, man, it was a good day. And then, of course, you know, in the middle of the second season, Kate and I hooked up. So it's like I had a place to eat my lunch now. You know what I mean?
Right. How did this start? Like, was there a moment? Was there music playing in the background? Or did someone capture it on film? I'm just wondering.
You know, she kept inviting me to see The Lampshades, her comedy act, which is absolutely brilliant. That's Kate Flannery brilliance all the way. And I was, you know, I'm invited all the time. Hey, I got a band. You want to come see my band? And I'm like, yeah, whatever. But she kept inviting me. And one night I was going to be at this club in Hollywood to see some other girl and just somebody I was hanging out with. And then I said, well, I'm busy on Saturday. And I go, well, what time? Because the thing I was going to was later. She goes, 8:00. I go, oh, I can make that work. And I go, where's it at? She goes, right on Hollywood Boulevard. I go, where on Hollywood Boulevard? She goes, it's an Improv Olympic. I go, that's where I'm going to be at 10 o'clock tonight, that same night. I said, this is meant to be. And we, you know, it's funny. She knew I had kids. She didn't know if I was divorced or married. And after the show, we went and got a drink. And 5 minutes in, I'm like, you and I should be dating.
You said that to her?
I am not that smooth. I had never said that to anybody else. But I had connected with her in such a way, and I knew she was brilliant. I think she was very attracted to me. She invited me a lot.
And, to the lampshades? Yeah. She invited you a lot.
Yeah, yeah, like every time it was, and it was, she used to do it every Saturday night. So, right. But the, I think the one moment that it, that we first had eye contact is I used to go around like for almost every time I was there, I would do portraits of you guys.
Yes.
Just because that's always really good filler if they're going to do a story or whatever. And I think this one time, I don't know if you remember, but it was the Christmas episode of TV Guide. They were going to do photos of everybody. Because it was, the show was picking up steam.
Sure.
And there's a picture of her holding up a Santa Claus doll. And other times I got her pulling a bottle of vodka out of the thing, looking up at me. And just, she was adorable. And it's funny, I met her as Meredith, and then I saw her as her character on stage. And I'm like, and my friend's like, look at her. And I'm like, take it easy, take it easy. And then she comes out walking like Kate Flannery. I'm like, now we're talking. That's why 5 minutes and I go, you and I should be dating.
You said that to her. That is amazing. Apparently, a recent interview she gave, she said that the two of you are like Jim and Pam because you worked together but didn't start dating until the end of season two.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
But she was never as mean to me as Pam was to Jim. Just kidding.
Oh.
I'm just talking storyline here.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Jen is a lovely woman.
Exactly. In the finale of The Office, Greg let you dance with Meredith during Dwight and Angela's wedding. How cool is that?
You know, Kate wanted me in the show, and I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, I didn't think it was going to happen. And then she wanted me to be one of the cops that takes Creed out at the end. But those were our real motor cops that stopped traffic for us. Those were real LAPD guys. So I was fine, you know, with just being her boyfriend at the wedding. And then, you know, they gave me a line in the warehouse when Pam reveals her mural, and which, here's a great story. She's going to be so mad when I tell you this. So Quapis comes up and he goes, hey, just say what a photographer would say. I go, yes, sir. And so Pam's like, all right, everybody, let's do this photo. And then everybody gets in. And I said, all right, everybody right here. That looks great. That looks great. You know, and then they yell cut. And Kate goes, and you're all standing right there. And this was a nervous moment for me anyway. And Kate goes, you can't talk. And I was just like, I was told I can talk. And all of a sudden, Kelly Cantley, who's this tall, walks through and she goes, you can talk. And she looks at her cane. She goes, he can talk. And then she takes off. And then Kate was just like, oh no, oh no. So, and then what happened was I didn't have a funny enough line, and Greg brought me into ADR. And I think you might've been there. I don't know. No, it was Angela, but they wanted to add just a couple dozen more, which a photographer would never say, because the whole reason I wouldn't say that is because you guys get bored with what's happening and you go upstairs. Brilliant writing. And so I'm at Universal one day and they're like, you need to go do ADR. I'm like, what? And I went in and Angela's doing her thing. And then for some reason, Brian, and God bless actors, man, God bless you guys, I could not say that line to save my life. I was a bumbling idiot. Just a couple dozen more. And Greg got right here and he's like, say it, you could say it. And I should have just put my full trust in this genius who I had watched for the last 19 years be the most absolute genius. And finally I mumbled it out. And the moment I'm done, he goes, all right, we got it. And I turn and Rain does like a cop kick in the door and he's screaming my line because he was coming in to do ADR after me. And I'm like, let's just have Rain do it. You know, it was a funny moment, but my God, I felt like an idiot.
That is amazing. When you're out with Kate, do people make jokes to you about dating Meredith?
They don't even see me. No, you know, a few things have happened since. Well, first of all, when syndication happened, when it started hitting regular, like a cable thing, Kate started getting bothered all the time by so many people. And then when it hit Netflix, she was mid-bite and people would stop and say, can we get a photo, all that kind of thing. But now people are stopping me. Like, if it's, it doesn't happen all the time, but somebody goes, hey, weren't you in the finale? I saw you in the finale of The Oven. Like, oh my God, it's really weird for me. Because I'm crazy. All about, you know, I can spot somebody spotting Kate from a mile away. And we have a little code word, which I'm not going to tell you, but it's from the show.
What's the code word?
I'm going to tell you privately.
No, what's the code word?
You'll find out privately. But I let her know, okay, incoming. You know what I mean?
Right.
But that's not
the code word. What's the code word?
I'm not going to tell you. Okay. Kate will be mad at me if I tell you.
Well, listen, I've been talking to people, you know, for now, the last couple of years, which has been amazing, and how willing people are now after 8 years of the show being done, talking about it. And as you just mentioned, you know, the sustained, not just success, but, you know, as I say, not just survived, but it's thriving now, all of this time later. And this exploration that I've been going through now, we have collected it all together. And we're coming out with a book that's going to be launched really soon. And you are a huge part of that book because there are hundreds of never before seen photos that you took on set in some of the most intimate moments during the show. So when we started talking about photos for the book, I went, wait a second, there was a cast book that I understand you helped put together at the end of the show that was it was one of those things like right in front of me the whole time. It's like right in my living room on my coffee table. It has been for the last 8 years. And so I started looking through books. How did that come about, that creation of that amazingly beautiful book?
That happens a lot. Like when Will and Grace was wrapping up, I did that. Almost every show does it now, and I think that is the greatest gift you can get as a wrap gift. I mean, that's the great thing about being a photographer in general. Like even if you're at a party or an event, you're going to talk to every single person in the room. That was my chance to work with every person, and a lot of people try to ditch you and not, you know, but I was pretty sneaky and I was able to get people.
That's
always something really fun to do. It's so much work, especially at the end of a run, but
yes.
Like what you're saying right now, it's like, it's unbelievable.
Well, it's so beautiful. And so for, you know, the last 8 years when people, you know, come over to my house and we're talking about the show, always refer to the book and they look through it and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe you have these photos. Well, now everyone in the world can't come to my house to look at my book, but now so many of these photos are going to be in this book. And so I feel like Conan O'Brien here, but we're going to play a little game. Okay.
All right.
We're going to play a little game. Describe that picture. Hashtag copyright, hashtag Brian Baumgartner, hashtag The Office Deep Dive. I don't know if that covers it, but I'm going to make these photos available on my Instagram so other people can mention it, but I'm going to show you a series of photos, and this can be fast round. You can say one word. You can describe something that you remember from some of these iconic photos of the show. So the first photo, Steve Carell sitting at what looks like a dinner party with the St. Pauli girl, you know, light up thing behind him.
That sign was so bright, man. It was so bright, which was the joke, but in a still, you want the actor to look good. So the sign's blown out. That was one of the most unforgettable nights of my life. I can't even believe how hard we laughed. And that's hard when, as the photographer, man, there were tears, just my whole shirt was wet from just laughing so hard with that stupid TV, the plasma TV.
But, TV.
Yeah, but this was intense. You know, if I had one word for this, intense, because that fight was intense.
Michael.
I'll try to give you one word answers.
No, you can describe more. I'm just saying it can be fast.
Sure.
Okay, photo two.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Meredith with intense...
Confusing. Because it's never made... There was never a reason in the episode of why her face looked like she was dropped into a pizza oven.
Okay, so go ahead. You can say this is her... Go ahead.
Yeah, so there was a... She got... was it sunburned or...
I think it was sunburned, right?
Yeah. Extremely sunburned and... we even did a big shot. I hope to not ruin another photo, but there's a group shot in the warehouse and she looks like this. And there was no explanation why, because the storyline was cut. So I think valuable lessons were learned during this episode that, you know, if you have something like this, you better back it up.
Yes. Is she just as beautiful there as the moment you met her?
Beauty is skin deep, Brian.
Oh my God.
No. She's lovely. She's lovely.
All right. Photo three.
Okay.
A group of people.
Oh yeah.
Around a giant 100. Tell me about this.
I think Phyllis's hair speaks for all of us. It was so hot and dusty there. We were out at the Calamigos Ranch, I think, and you guys, usually when they cut a cake like this, they're telling you about your next pickup.
Right.
And that might have been what happened this day. But all I know is I never got any cake.
You never got any cake.
And a gigantic cake like that, I never did.
This was the celebration of the 100th episode.
Huge milestone in a show. Huge. I've been there for hundreds of them.
Yes. Company picnic. Yeah. And you see Greg there cutting the cake. But yes, we were all very, 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 very hot
sweaty
out there in Malibu. All right, picture four.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, that was scary.
Will Ferrell dunking a basketball over me sitting on the ground. What do you remember about this day?
You know what, Brian? And I'm not bullshitting you, but I could have easily shot that in a way to see his face, but I wanted you in there looking like you're about to get crushed.
Yes.
But yeah, this was the shot to me, even though he used his right hand and covered his face. That was a pretty crazy day.
Yeah.
That was a classic Will Ferrell day where you keep checking yourself, like, is this really happening?
Yes.
He's amazing.
He is amazing. All right. This picture here, picture five, this is our final
very
table.
Last reading. Yeah. That was, I was crying as hard then as I was when Steve left, but just seeing everyone's emotion and everything else. And a lot of you guys held it together. But again, I've been at a million of these things too, a million of the last table read. But this one, man, this was like, you know, finding out that your grandparents are both going to die or something. I always feel that way at the end of a show. It's like there's a death in the family, but we're still going to see each other down the road. But it's always that sad.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people have this photo.
Yeah. Well, Chris Workman called me and said, hey, I'd love to do this gift for the cast. And he blew it up big. But I remember I walked around the entire room, made sure I get all the faces, but this one has so many great expressions and it was, you know, and Chris just blew it up for everybody and it's fantastic. I'm sure it's hanging in everyone's house. And that's how I love to judge my work by not how much money I make or where my pictures are published, but where they're hanging. That's important to me.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, picture six and seven.
Oh, man, yeah, rough night. That was a very touching moment when she took that off the wall. But, you know, everyone always posts pictures like the one on the right of, you know, when Steve left, I shot that famous shot of him with the slate, and I got a wide shot, and everyone are bawling their eyes out so hard. This was the equivalent of that. I do have another picture of Pam doing, the very last shot was Pam's talking head. It doesn't appear in the show that it's the last thing. I think her taking the picture, no, it's us by the tree outside, right? But anyway, I was outside of the conference room and I have a photograph of everyone silhouetted watching that final Have I not sent that to you? It's everyone watching her talking head through the window of the conference room. It's a beautiful shot.
I haven't seen it, but I need to.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. I'll send it to you.
Yeah. Chris, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
For talking, for being so candid and open about your experience, not just on our show, but your time at NBC. I appreciate you and your friendship. So thank you so much for coming in and talking to me.
Oh, my pleasure.
And,
my pleasure.
Yeah. Onwards and upwards to the next show, right? To the next office on NBC.
I'm not sure if anything will rise to that occasion, but we'll see.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, buddy.
And there you have it. What a guy. Chris, Daddy-O, it was so great having you on. Thank you for sharing your story with all of us. And I know that you're a fan of this podcast. So my only question is, after today, what is your favorite episode? To all of you listeners out there, thanks for coming back. Now, if you come back next Tuesday, then you'll find we'll be talking to another man that you all have been dying to hear from. Hint, his first name starts with the same letter as Chris's. 5 seconds. Okay, I'll tell you. It's Craig. Craig Robinson, the funniest man I have ever seen on a stand-up stage. That's right, Mr. Daryl Philbin himself. But until then, have a great week, everyone. The Office Deep Dive is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Leng Lee. Our producers for this episode are Liz Hayes and Diego Tapia. My main man in the booth is Colin Tedeschi. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend Creed Bratton, and the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.
Have you ever felt depressed about work, only to have your dad be like, why are you so down? So you told him you hate your job, and he said, well, you better talk yourself out of it. And then you thought, I love to talk. I could host a podcast. And then you went to Spreaker from iHeart and started a podcast and got good at it, then monetized it, then quit your boring job, then told your dad, thanks for the advice. And he was like, well, that's not what I meant, and I don't understand what a podcast is, but you seem happy, so that's great, kiddo. You ever do that? Well, you could. At Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker. Ask your dad. You actually don't.
Big Brother, North Korea's Forgotten Prince is a new true crime podcast that dives deep into the life and mysterious assassination of the man once destined to be North Korea's next dictator. Join me, Eden Lee, as we investigate a twisting tale of espionage, palace gossip, and political backstabbing, and dive into the motives and suspects behind the most bizarre assassination plot of the 21st century. Listen to Big Brother on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Coming February 23rd.
Hi, I'm Glory Edom, host of Well Read Black Girl. Each week, we journey together through the cultural moment where art, culture, and literature collide and pay homage to the women whose books we grew up reading. It's the literary kickback you never knew you needed. Listen to Well Read Black Girl on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.